That was music by Antonín Dvořák, the first of his five bagatelles for the kind of curious combination of a string quartet with an instrument called the harmonium. And it's two violins and cello, so without the fourth instrument of the string quartet, plus harmonium, which is an instrument not unlike your grandmother's parlor organ, but slightly different. Performers here are members of the Takács Quartet, with the absent violist actually playing harmonium in this particular recording. His name, Gábor Ormai, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the show. I opened with that music because that music will open the concerts by the Mark Morris Dance Group, which are happening at the Krannert Center in Urbana this week. Wednesday and Thursday at 7:30. And that set of five bagatelles is the first piece on the program. They make an annual pilgrimage, as it were, to the Krannert Center in Urbana. They've had a close relationship, the two, for a very long time. And they're back here right around this time, March, April, each year. And in the 4 years that we've been doing this program, I've had the privilege to welcome Mark Morris to the program. And true to form, he is here again this year, right across from me. Thanks for coming in.
You bet.
I was listening to the music for this concert, all the music that, because you always have live music on your concerts, first of all. I was thinking that some pieces that you choose to choreograph, I can imagine why you might have, or to me they seem more choreographic, at least in my non-choreographic brain. Mm-hmm. And other ones seem decidedly not so. We'll talk about maybe the biggest one of those, which is will be at the end of the program, one of the motets by Johann Sebastian Bach called Jesu meine Freude. This one that we just played, I can imagine a little bit. The two that'll come later by Schubert and a fellow named Alexander Cherepnin, I really could hear dancing somehow or another. So I'm therefore always curious how you do choose these pieces.
Well, we're different choreographers then. You and I are different kinds of choreographers.
I am an absolute non-choreographer.
First of all, it's very often music that was written specifically to be danced to, for me, is not so great. A lot of times it's so regularized, or a lot of composers imagine that dancers need to have, you know, a oom-pah-pah if it's a waltz, et cetera, or a boom chick if it's in duple time. So that's kind of true for social dancing, but for the stuff that we do, I try not to. I don't use very much music that's written for dancing. There's exceptions. Stravinsky wrote great dancing music. Tchaikovsky wrote great dancing music.
Prokofiev.
Yeah, Prokofiev did pretty well, too. But, it's like Beethoven's worst music was dances, And a lot of Mozart's worst music was written for dances, for dance sections of operas or stuff like that. But the thing is, in something like Baroque music, like this Bach that's coming up, all of the rhythms always, the swing, the rhythms, the names of movements came from dance quite directly. So to me, even though they weren't intended to be danced to, there's so much sort of swing in the music and the surprises of, phrase lengths and stuff like that. I have to have music that isn't going to fatigue me, that isn't going to bore me. If I'm going to listen to it many, many times and study it and make up a piece, I want it to have enough sort of surprises in it and enough structural integrity that it can take the weight of a dance on it.
How much of the deciding factor is meter, rhythm, pulse, and how much of it is sound?
Oh, that's hard to say. They all play into that. But in something like the Bach, because it's based on a chorale, it's pretty much a series of a theme and variations in a certain way. So that is always interesting. It's interesting for composers. It's interesting for choreographers to take a motif and ring changes on it, to make something different and interesting in another way from how the theme works. So that happens a lot. I'm also drawn to unusual instrumentation, like this Dvorak with the harmonium, which is wonderful. And in the case of the Bach, it's a five-part chorus that, you know, with continuo, and sometimes we double it with, you know, strings playing with the voices, depending on the situation. So, you know, I like uneven phrase lengths. I like a surprise in the instrumentation or in the rhythm or some kind of what, if it were popular music, you would call a hook.
In this case, the hook of maybe this piece we just heard might be...
Well, it's bohemian music. You know, it's very much folk sounding because it is. And, you know, two violins, cello, and a harmonium. The dance has six dancers and another character in it. And in fact, that particular piece, the Dvorak, which you can play on the piano, but I think it makes it deadly non-interesting to do that. But I choreographed the piece, which is called The Office, originally for a folk dance company, specifically a Croatian folk dance company called Živeli in Columbus, Ohio. They asked for a dance from me, and I said, yeah, fine, whatever, whenever I can, not imagining it would ever happen. But I grew up with a big experience in Croatian dance. And so I made up this dance on them, which is not Croatian in any way, but it has... It's distinctly folk dance looking and sounding. And so then we adapted the piece to my company, and it's been out of the repertory for a while. We just put it back together. So it's a dance that starts with six people and diminishes as it goes along. Their people are asked out as the dance commences.
You said, would it give away to answer? You said six people and another character.
Right. Yeah. There's a non-dancing character in this piece. That's all I can tell you. The person who takes people away.
Ah, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, what you just said a bit ago sort of raised a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you choreograph for others? I mean, I sort of had the impression that at least these days, you mostly choreograph on your own group.
Oh yeah. I've very rarely for a while. Mr. Mikhail Baryshnikov and I had a company that we started together called the White Oak Dance Project that ran for a dozen years or so. And he and they did my choreography exclusively in the very early 90s. While my company was in Brussels, this company, which was a mix of ballet dancers and modern dancers, if we have to divide them that way, and toured the world doing a repertory of my choreography. Then when we came back from Brussels, there wasn't a need for a company to just do my work, so that became a repertory company. I choreograph with some frequency. Every year or two, I do a piece for a classical ballet company. I work with ballet companies a lot and do commissions. The last one I did was for Pacific Northwest Ballet in Seattle. Other than that, which sounds like a lot, I work only with my company. So, and I did a piece for a Ukrainian dance company this last summer, a company called Voloshki from Philadelphia. And so it's specifically because they were a Ukrainian company or a Croatian company or a ballet company that I choreographed, so that no one is doing the same repertory as my own company, the Mark Morris Dance Group. People, you know, in universities and conservatories learn the work from my company, but I don't allow other companies to perform it because we do it better.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Fair enough. Course, we're the experts at that. So.
Of course, how would you know if you never let them play it, do it?
I know. Somehow I just know.
That way you can say it for sure.
That's right.
Without any question. So when you're doing something for another company, mm-hmm. how well do you have to know the other company?
I have to know the company well enough to be willing to do a piece for them. You know, in the case of a ballet company, the requirement is pretty much they have to, that company has to rent a piece that exists. So, you know, I've worked for many years with the San Francisco Ballet, which is a fabulously good company. And so a piece that I've choreographed on them could, when the license works out, be done by another ballet company. And I have people who go out and cast and set the piece. If I can, I go to rehearsal, I help in casting, I do final rehearsals before the performance when possible. Then if they do a couple, three pieces and I approve of how they've been done, I'll consider a commission, a brand new piece, which I don't do very often because I'm lucky and good enough that my company has a lot of work. So I'm almost always working on a new dance or two with the Mark Morris dance group. So it happens, I don't know, every year and a half or so I make up a dance for people other than my own company.
The piece that we just heard one movement of, and I want to play another one, at least part of it, the Dvorak Bagatelles, you said was, you know, made for a Croatian company, and then you brought it back. What makes you decide to bring something back? A dry spell, so you bring back something old?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Or, you know, I want to, I make up a lot of new pieces, and I like to have a historical cross-section of my work. So I'll occasionally bring back a dance from 20, 25 years ago and the one that I just finished yesterday. You know, there's some pieces like The Hard Knot or L'Allegro, Il Penseroso ed Il Moderato, which have never left the repertory for, you know, 20, 25 years.
That's one with that last one, music by Handel.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. The Office, you said you called this music The Office.
Yeah.
Will it be obvious why when people watch?
Probably.
It certainly wouldn't be from, you know, Dvorak Bagatelles, you know, Bohemian dance music. Why not call it The Office?
Well, the dance to this music is pretty much based on waiting. So I imagine The Office is off stage. So it's sort of the dance takes place in a waiting room. I can say that, with people doing dances while waiting.
So when you're deciding to choreograph a piece, the music comes first?
Always, yeah.
Always. That's mm-hmm. what I thought I remember from last time. In which case, when does the concept, you know, sort of a conceit, as it were,
mm-hmm.
when does that come up? I mean, is there something about the music that says, oh, I think I'll play a waiting game or, you know, do a waiting thing and then go
in the fact,
office?
The dance that I call The Office to these Bagatelles of Dvorak, I started a piece and I didn't want everyone to have to do all of it. Frankly, some of them couldn't keep up as much. The people who were less good dancers, frankly. Or, you know, I also wanted it to get lonelier as it went along. So what happened was each of the five Bagatelles, yeah, it's a sextet that diminishes to a duet. Each dance has one fewer members. And in between, to give it a dramatic motivation, a dramatic logic, I added a character who comes in. I mean, it's not a secret because it's been reviewed for years, as someone who comes in with a clipboard and removes one of the people from this room, and that person isn't seen again. So the dance gets smaller as it goes along, and it's a little bit fraught. It's a little ambiguous as to what's going on. I mean, that's on purpose. I don't know. Just no one comes back, at least during the duration of this piece. So what happened was it was pragmatic and practical that I, as the dancing sort of went on longer and became somewhat more complicated, I reduced the size of the cast and then turned that into the story of why people are gone. So, of course, you know, when I taught it to my own company, that changed it. But I also wanted something that is more, it's quite dramatic, in fact. And just, it turns out to be dramatic, and it's through very, very simple means of reduction.
Of course, office environments, often dramatic, or at least melodramatic.
That's right.
The fourth of the five Bagatelles has, as a form, a canon, which is to say a round.
Right. Very strict one, yeah.
And I'm assuming that informs the choreography somehow.
Well, that's correct in assuming that. Yes.
Not in an obvious way.
No, in this case, it's an exact canon, physically and musically. But, you know, it doesn't have to be. You know, it is because I want it to be. Sometimes I put canons or, you know, other devices, compositional devices of all kinds in where they don't necessarily represent something that's happening musically. But in this case, it's definitely point by point, yeah.
A bit of the fourth Bagatelle of the Set of Five by Antonin Dvorak. This played by three members of the, actually all four members of the Takacs Quartet performing, but the two violinists and cello actually playing their instruments, and then the violist playing the harmonium, a reed organ of sorts. One of the pieces that will be on the program this week by the Mark Morris Dance Group for two performances, Wednesday and Thursday at the Krannert Center in Urbana. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, where I'm pleased to have Mark Morris this hour with us. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. The progress of this program, well, it starts with Dvorak, continues with music by Franz Schubert, which we'll hear a bit of in a moment, and then there are more bagatelles to start the second, completely different, maybe what I would think of as more typical for piano, and then going on to this fabulous choral work by Bach, which will I want to wrap everything up with it because it's the grandest piece, certainly. The Schubert, when I started to listen to it, is the tune I think people will recognize. I imagine it's music they'll recognize. That's one. As soon as it got going, I thought, well, I could imagine something by Mark Morris to this somehow or another. This is also a piece of chamber music for violin, cello, and piano. Mm-hmm. Why this one? Nocturne, it's sometimes called. It's called
right.
Adagio or Nocturne, depending.
Right. Well, because it's gorgeous. I mean, you know, the whole point... I have to like a piece of music. That's the bottom line there. And I have to be able to listen to it for a really long time. And this is a piece that I'd never heard before. And I know a lot of Schubert, but it's a standalone movement that perhaps was part of one of the trios. We're not quite positive. But it's a very, very strangely sort of strung out, and a very, very beautiful, surprising piece of music. And I heard a recording of it, and I decided to make up a dance to it, a standalone dance. It doesn't belong in anything else. And it is for four dancers who are, there are two casts. There's a male cast and a female cast. And there's a man and woman who knows each part. And so the dance can be done with any combination of up to four men and up to four women, or two and two and one and three, whatever. So it's double cast, and it can, for some reason, of course, the casting changes entirely how people read the piece. So I try to surprise myself with who's going to do it on what nights. It's not improvised at all, but everybody has a track that they do within the piece. And I don't know, I made it up as just sort of on a whim, and it's a very melancholic isn't the word, because it has a sort of a grandeur to it that's wonderful. I would call it a nocturne if I were going to call it something. Besides Rock of Ages, I call it Rock of Ages because there's a suggestion of that hymn tune that's in there.
Yeah. Since you mentioned that just now, the last piece, Jesu meine Freude, based on a chorale, which you could call a hymn tune. This one has a hymn tune in it. Is that coincidental that they're on the same program?
No. Or yes. Yeah, I don't know. Both of those pieces are up right now. And, you know, also I've choreographed the Ives Piano Trio, which is, you know, riddled with hymn tunes. And, you know, Four Saints in Three Acts of Virgil Thomson, which has loads of hymn tunes. I think, I don't know, I'm not a religious fellow, but I think that a lot of people have used, as base material, as fundamental material, found music. In the case of Bach, of course, you know, the whole hymnal. And I think, you know, it's maybe it's easier to find a theme that you can work from than to write your own. I don't know. Maybe that's a cheap thing to say, but it's a coincidence. That's the answer.
You said that this piece could be done for women, for men, or some combination. I think I've read before that you tend to do, at least sometimes, blind casting, as it were, where a woman might take what you might think would be a man's role, or the other way around in various of your pieces. Am I remembering that right? Putting it right?
Yeah, because I want all of my dancers to be able to do everything. Because I have about 20 dancers, and it's nice if everybody has all of the same skills and capacity, then men only do this and women do this, or, you know, which is one of the problems I have with the ballet industry in general, is that the technique, the different techniques that men and women employ are so radically opposed that it's hard for them to do each other's material, each other's moves. So I've all, from the beginning, it used to be more of a sex politics thing than it is now. You know, it's practical.
And you know, what do you mean that it used
to be? Well, it used to be I wouldn't allow, I didn't do a great deal of partnering that had, you know, big, strong men lifting tiny, light ladies, because my company never looked like that. And it doesn't never look like that on purpose, because I wanted sex equality in my work, power. I wanted power equality, and I wanted physical possibilities to be even. But then I learned that some things are done better by certain people, and so I
certain people, not necessarily by certain types of people.
Both, yeah, both. So you know, although I, you know, I think everyone should be able to change a tire and fry an egg. You know, not everybody thinks that way in the, you know, the super conservative dance industry. So this from many years ago was much more of a political thing than it is now. Now it's just how I work, and I work with big, you know, large groups of people and small ones. I have some dances which are exclusively to be done by men or women, and other things where, you know, in a group of, things are interchangeable between the sexes. And that, you know, very often a male dancer, his understudy is a female dancer. That happens because we can do that, and I like that. So it increases the potentiality and the possibilities of what every person, every individual, male or female, can do physically and in the realm of the theater and in the choreography.
The piece we're talking about specifically, called Rock of Ages, sets an adagio or nocturne by Franz Schubert, one of his many posthumous pieces, one of his many possibly incomplete pieces. As Mark said, it might be incomplete, it might not be incomplete. Just so you know what sounds we're talking about, here is a performance by pianist David Golub with violinist Mark Kaplan and cellist Colin Carr, at least the beginning anyway, of this music by Schubert. So for some reason, just seemed able to imagine gestures of some kind or another, which I would be pretty confident are not the gestures that you chose to choreograph.
Well, there's only one way to find out.
That's right. That's right. Go hear the concert. I'm talking with Mark Morris of the Mark Morris Dance Group here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and the group is in their annual residency at the Krannert Center in Urbana, doing all kinds of outreach as they do, and of course a couple of performances Wednesday and Thursday, 7:30 each of them. And Mark always does what they call a talk back afterwards. And sometimes it's like he's back talking you. I've noticed somebody asks a question and you just give the question right back to them sometimes, depending upon the nature of the question.
I strive for frankness.
Yes. Well, you certainly succeed. Our program today and do you call them, concerts or recitals?
I call it a show.
A show. Well, fine. Then your show starts with a bagatelle, and then the second half starts with bagatelles.
Mm-hmm.
Bagatelles are, as you understand them, what, generally?
Bagatelle is like a little, a petit rien, like a nothing, a little, not an etude, but a small scale jewel.
A trifle?
Because bagatelle is also a kind of a diamond, isn't it? I think it also is. I think a bagatelle can be a jewel.
No, that's a food.
Maybe. I think so. So a complete piece that's in a very small scale, you know, a small proportion, short, small.
And the Dvorak that we heard, maybe that way, you know, a couple of 3 minutes each of them.
Yeah.
The pieces that you do the second half are very short and very small and very concise by a fellow named Alexander Cherepnin, who is a composer that I sort of heard of. But I don't know that I knew any of his music. So I sampled a few of these. Where did you find these?
This piece, which the dance is called 10 Suggestions, because it is, I found a recording of this music it's a very, very early dance of mine. I used to do it. It was based on improvisations. I did a solo to these pieces, and each one is done with a prop. And I just laid things out and played the music and would dance with whatever I picked up. So it looks a little bit like constructivism. It looks a little bit like early modernism. It looks a little Isadora Duncanian, and it's still quite free. So there are two dancers in my company who perform it, and I used to do it. It's the solo, it still has improvisatory elements to it, but it's pretty much fixed. And I can't remember when I got an LP of this music, but it was probably in the late 70s when I first heard it, and the dance dates from the very early 80s, maybe even 1980, I'm not sure. So I don't know the provenance of that, except that they're wonderful, wonderful pieces. You know, his Cherepnin was a wonderful composer and had kids and grandkids who are composers as well. So it's a big musical family.
You said you have two dancers that do it, but just one at a time. It's four,
yes,
set for one dancer.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a solo.
Is this one of the few or not so few dances that you can say you first did and then passed on?
Passed on makes it sound like I'm dead.
Yeah,
but
I know. That's
I didn't,
wrong term.
I'm not yet. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Then I handed down.
Yeah, handed down. Well, in other words, how common is it that these pieces were choreographed on you?
Well, a lot of the dances that I was in are still done. You know, it's like a big one that we still do a lot is Dido and Aeneas, where I was Dido and the sorceress, and we still do that. But, you know, I've made up a lot of dances since I've basically retired from the stage. So, you know, they have to be a certain number of years old for me to have done them. And this is one of the very, very earliest ones that I did. When we had the 25th anniversary of my company a while ago, we put together dancers and dances. We put together, revived some of the pieces from the distant past, which we didn't do partly because the personnel had changed and partly because a lot of them were to recorded music, because I wasn't using live music for every single show like I have been for a long time. So to bring this piece, 10 Suggestions, back was, you know, watching tape, me remembering it, going through notes with the score and teaching it to a couple of people without making it so strict that they weren't free to have a little bit of improvisatory spontaneity to it.
Well, that was actually going to be my next question. When you do something that is made on you, how much freedom do they get? And I guess a little bit.
A little bit. This is one of the dances that has the most sort of choices to be made in the moment. And that's also because it's a solo. That gets harder the more people you add to something. But still, there are elements in a lot of the pieces that I've choreographed where people have to do something entirely different in every performance. The dance will be completely fixed except for a couple pages of music where I never want that to be the same twice. And that's a hard thing to keep track of as a performer.
So do you just essentially leave a blank space and say here, do something?
Well, it's usually based on something. They're usually structured in some way, in very specific way, spatially or rhythmically or something, or in this case, it's a prop. Like, here's a chair. You know, the first question is, what do you do with a chair? And the answer is, of course, sit on it. And then from there, you can go on and expand on that a little bit. So, although it's not, you know, it's not a free form in any way, there is the pressure and the relief of having to come up with something on the spot, which is always interesting.
Of course, I suppose you could do something else with a chair. You could juggle it, which made me think. They just had Circus Oz from Australia.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
Last week. and a woman juggled a table with her feet, which was actually really, really kind of cool. Anyway, that made me think if you could do other things with a chair, then
well, of course, that's among them.
Among them. Well, here are three of the, I forget how many bagatelles.
Ten
of them by Cherepnin. These are numbers 5 to 7, if you really want to know. The composers at the piano, Alexander Cherepnin. This is some of the music that makes up the dance called the 10 Suggestions. Oh, that's the number of bagatelles by Mark Morris, which will be done this week at the Krannert Center in Urbana. There you go. Three bagatelles, numbers 5 through 7 out of a set of 10 by Alexander Cherepnin, played by the composer here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. All 10 have been set by Mark Morris into a dance that is called 10 Suggestions. And at the Krannert Center, it'll be danced by Amber Star Merkins, unless somebody changes that before the concerts Wednesday and Thursday at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Support for today's broadcast on FM 90.9 comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products for hospitals and patients throughout our region. Blood donations help save the lives of the injured and critically ill. Information is available at bloodservices.org. So I sort of mentioned at the outset that of these four pieces of music that you've decided to choreograph, two of them I could imagine dancing to. That was one of them. I could I'm sure I'll like whatever it is because the music is so wonderful and it has to suggest wonderful things. And two of them I can imagine, especially the next one, the last one on the program, a motet by Johann Sebastian Bach. I think it's the largest by far of his motets. Jesu meine Freude, it's also the most wonderful, I think. And lots of interesting aspects to this performance, which we'll get into in a minute, but I wanted, before we say anything else about it, let people hear this music. They've probably heard it, don't know it, don't know that they've heard it, but let's give a listen. Okay. This is a group called the Alsfelder Vocal Ensemble, led by Wolfgang Helbig, here on Live and Local. So there you heard the theme, as it were, the chorale, Jesu meine Freude, and then the very beginning of what you could call, and Mark did, the first variation of sorts, which is really what Bach is doing with these pieces. Jesu meine Freude, I don't recall, though I might be wrong, that when you've been at the Krannert Center before, I've seen choral pieces that you have set. I've seen some vocal pieces you did last year.
I think we did the Vivaldi Gloria here with the choir.
Well, that's one that I missed. That's
I missed. And it's, this is the piece that I choreographed, I don't know how many years, I don't know the dates of anything, but I choreographed it because of a great friend of mine, Craig Smith, who ran the Emmanuel Music Program at Emmanuel Church in Boston, had one of the great choirs, and they'd been doing the Bach, the appropriate Bach cantata for the Sunday, the church calendar, for about 20 years. And he was a good friend of mine and has produced wonderful singers and was my first conducting coach. He died a few years ago, was a very good friend of mine. And I did this piece because the choir was so fabulous and I wanted to do a choir piece. And it can be done just with continuo or with, instruments on, other instruments playing the vocal parts as well. So it's the biggest piece of purely choral music I've ever done. It's the biggest of the motets. It's a five-part as opposed to, they're extra soprano, so it's a five-part chorus. And it's in multiple movements that sort of approach the chorale from different points of view and hide it and reveal it and point things out. So this particular piece we brought back. I haven't done it for a few years. It came back recently into the repertory, and I've been conducting it. So I'm also conducting it here. And I was out here a couple weeks ago to rehearse with the Bach ensemble, the people who are singing here, who are wonderful. And so I came out to do a preliminary rehearsal so that it saves time and effort when my company shows up in the theater. And I don't think that's kind of it. It's a big, semi-thorny piece of music. It's a lot of work. It's a tricky, tricky piece, and it's thrilling.
A tricky piece?
Musically.
Musically, yeah. for sure. Well, you actually anticipated the other things I wanted to address. Some of the other things I wanted to address, the rest will come up as we talk, I guess. One is that sometimes you use your own performers, the three pieces we've played so far, you use your own sort of musical staff who travel around. And then sometimes you use locals, as you did. You had some University of Illinois singers last year. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the pieces, but I remember that. And sometimes you do conduct, which I've only heard of so far, and I haven't previously gotten to see you actually do it. So now you're going to do it. You came out here to work with them before, and them, you know, you said the Bach Ensemble, that's actually an acronym, so it's the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, B-A-C-H, and they just had presented a concert on Sunday, in fact, just for organ and harpsichord. Do you normally do that? You try to get into the community, work with them ahead of time, or sometimes you just get with them right at the end and hope that somebody did a good job?
Well, we do it whenever we can because, you know, we do a lot of what is called outreach when we work, especially here. We teach a lot of classes. I work with the opera department. My dancers work with the dancers. We work with a lot of local schools. There's a dance session for people with Parkinson's disease. We talk to the arts management people and the stage management. It's like we're all over the place when we're here for the week we are annually. So whenever we can, we include people in the performances, and it doesn't happen a lot because it's a lot of time to do that, frankly, to go ahead and to work with people besides my group, which is called the MMDG Music Ensemble, and ranges from solo piano to an orchestra, and that can include vocalists depending on what we do and where. But since I keep a very big active repertory of pieces, of dances, and consequently music, we're always looking for ways to make those things work very well, of course, and to be able to do pieces of music of different scale. Because I have a lot of pieces that are to chamber music, but I also have some bigger pieces, and I love to get those done as well. So in this case, it's about 24, 25 singers, a couple of, four instrumentalists, and then my dancers. So it's a big project. It's a big show, and it takes some prep work. So they were very well prepared when I got here to rehearse with them. So I'm looking forward to that being very well done.
How often does it happen that the local performers aren't very well prepared? And then what happens?
What a horrible question. That would never, ever happen. It's happened.
Of course it's happened.
Yeah, it's happened. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is replace somebody, but probably the first thing you do is just wince slightly, you know, and you get through it and you do what you can to make it better. So they were super prepared. And of course, having the piece of music prepared isn't the same as having it prepared in a very specific way that goes with the choreography. You know, it's like something like I have to conduct the silent parts between pieces in order to get the dance. You know, sometimes the dancers have to start on a downbeat from nothing, you know, from silence, and they don't necessarily see my upbeat, you know, and by the time you hear it, you're too late. So that kind of coordination is what really takes the most effort.
Will the choir and you be in the pit?
Yes.
Not on the stage?
No, in the pit, yeah.
Have you ever had the performer, the musical performers, part of the staging?
Well, I do that, you know, I work in opera a lot, so certainly, you know, I stage singers and dancers and, you know,
I'm actually talking about for your company.
For my company, there's sometimes a piano is about all I can handle on stage because of the room. We want room to dance. Piano and violin or piano and cello occasionally, but piano and one singer sometimes, but usually no. That's what stages, well, first of all, you want as much room as you can possibly have. And, you know, we dance on stages of different sizes all the time. So to show up someplace and find out that a grand piano takes up half the room, it's a problem, you know, and we don't work with an upright. So, you know, we adjust all the time. So it's safer to keep them out of the way, but visible and audible, of course.
You called this dance, this is the one you didn't call it anything other than what it is, Jesu meine Freude.
That's right.
Which means it could be Jesu, well, I guess Jesu my joy most often.
Yeah.
I see a translation here, Jesu my salvation, which doesn't seem right.
Yeah, joy, too.
By Johann Sebastian Bach. As you said, vocally very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And difficult even beyond the individual voice parts, vocally difficult to make sense out of from a conductor's point of view.
Yeah. Well, there's a very complicated sort of a double fugue in the middle of it. And, you know, you can get lost, frankly, from conductor to conductor I've been lost before. Let me just tell you that. It's like, and then you pretend you cued somebody to come in, you know, and say, oh, thank you, et cetera. Anyway, I try not to bluff, but it's a very tricky piece of music. But also the dance, which is a double fugue, they have to, you know, it's also spatial. You can also run into somebody. You can't just sound bad and miss an entrance, but you can actually, like, put somebody's eye out. And the dancers are working from memory. So, you know, it's a very, very interesting relationship between the music as written, the music as sung, and the dance as danced. You know, it has to balance out. It's tricky.
Do you, by any chance, give the dancers correspondingly difficult things to do?
In the case of, well, this fugue in question, which is really pretty much the dead center of the piece, the dancers are dancing very, very specifically to the vocal parts. You know, so I'll say, you know, altos, you're on the wrong leg, and the dancers know what I'm talking about. So the material, the dance material, the steps are developed the same way as a composition as the piece of music. So when someone's doing a parallel line in the, you know, two voices doing the same parallel line, then the dancers are doing the same thing. But then it has, of course, the complication of each voice in the dance is a couple. So there, you know, there are five parts singing and five couples dancing. So it's already, you know, the stakes are higher. And it's something. It's beautiful and it's complicated and it's looks like the easiest thing in the world.
Which is probably the best compliment for the dancers.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah.
Here's a little bit more of Jesus Minor for you. I don't know. This CD doesn't happen to have tracks, so I'm not sure. I think I got it in between variations. So we'll see where we are.
Drop the needle. That's what that's
essentially,
for.
Yeah. Hit the button and see what comes out. So we heard one section leading into another section of the Jesu meine Freude by Johann Sebastian Bach. This particular performance by the Gechinger Kantorei of Stuttgart, led by Helmut Rilling, here on Live and Local. And it'll be sung by the chorus of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, conducted by Mark Morris, as part of the Mark Morris Dance Group's yearly visitation to the Krannert Center in Urbana, and it's going to close their concerts Wednesday and Thursday. As I said earlier, this of the four pieces on the concert, it's the one you didn't change the name of. You gave it the name of the piece itself.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it has a specific text with a very specific subject in the case of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and some really specific images, sorrow, pain, cross, death, scorn, you know, very, very religious
mm-hmm.
Images, as well as some sort of mystical notions around them. What do you do with that in choreography?
Well, that's one reason that we don't dance on the radio as much. It's very gestural. It refers to the text directly. I'm not a religious fellow in any way, believe me, but I have a great, great appreciation and fondness for this music. And so it can be seen in many different ways. It's let's say it's not pious, but it's very much about dancing to music.
Not irreverent either?
I have no reverence, so I have no irreverence.
Now that's could at least bear some analysis. I'll have to think about that. Maybe we should just leave that with people.
Yeah, I think so.
Mark Morris, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. And we'll look forward to next year, I presume. You'll be back at the Krannert Center, and I hope you'll be back on the show.
I'd love to.
And you can see the concerts Wednesday, or shows, as he puts it, Wednesday and Thursday, 7:30 each, the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. We have a few minutes here. I can mention some of the other things going on in our listening area over the next couple of days, if I can see my computer okay. Tonight, the voice students of Barrington Coleman on the campus of the U of I will be performing at 7:30 in the Music Building Auditorium. It's the weekly good old-fashioned hootenanny at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana at 8 o'clock tonight. Program called, speaking of dance, Women of Ireland will be at the Effingham Performance Center in Effingham tomorrow night at 7:30. And an Irish group, traditional Irish group from Ireland called Full Set will be on the Piper's Hut Concert Series at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And we'll have, I'm not even sure how many members chatting with us on tomorrow's Live and Local. So looking forward to that during this lead up to St. Patrick's Day. The Harding and Hinesley Bands on the U of I campus will perform at the Krannert Center tomorrow night at 7:30. The Champaign-Urbana Singer-Songwriter Collective will present Mac House, Laurie Bernard, and John McMahon at Clark Bar in Champaign tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And as Plain Old Ed at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. And finally, the Clark Gibson Quintet play jazz at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Looks like tomorrow's business on my calendar anyway is mostly in Champaign-Urbana, but no, by no means true for the rest of the week. Appreciate you joining us on the show today. You're listening to 90.9 WYLFM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Stay tuned for All Things Considered coming up at 5. I'll be back tomorrow at 4 o'clock. And let's go out with the fugue that Mark referred to from as the central portion of Bach's Jesu meine Freude. Thank you.